Heidi Ho, Good Neighbor.
That's the one. That is the one I'm going to stick with. Welcome back to another Room With A Review episode. And this week is a book. One I haven't done. Well, that type of text I haven't done for a while. Been mainly doing movies, TV shows for the last couple of months. And mainly because, I mean, if I'm not reading War and Peace, which I'll get to later on, then why am I reading another book? So this book is one called Between Us. And I picked it up a couple of years ago from English Teachers Association conference and didn't get around to reading. It was just kind of sat there in the pile and I thought, oh, this looks all right. I might give it a go. You know, I was planning on getting around to it eventually, but it was never high on my list. And yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it. So it's a novel by Claire Atkins, Australian novel, and in it, it's a multi-perspective narrative, which I really like. I thought that made it really interesting. We get told this story of, it really focuses on two main characters, although there's a third one that we get to see quite a bit too. But it's two main characters. One is a immigrant from Iran, and another one is the son of a Vietnamese immigrant. And the dad's name is Kenny, so he's one of the storytellers. But we also have his son who presents part of it too. So, which is Jono. So we've got Jono and Anna and Kenny. They're the three main storytellers for all of this. And it's quite a good book. I was kind of really going through it a lot. It wasn't one that I was kind of wanting to stop, or like it felt like a burden, or it was definitely what you'd call a page turner. And so I really, really liked how engaging it was. The idea of it was all really, really good. So in it, what you get is Anna, the refugee student. She's living in a detention center in Australia. She's got a younger brother that she's living with, as well as her pregnant mother. Father has been killed, and her mother is with a new man, although he is stuck on Nauru. And it kind of obviously shows you through her eyes and the eyes of her family, all the experiences they go through. You get some flashbacks that tell you about their past life and some of the experiences they overcame, some of the pretty horrible things that they have to endure as refugees, and to the best of my knowledge, it's pretty accurate. But you've also got her kind of transitioning into school. So the school-aged people from the refugee camp, they get on a bus, they go to school, and they go back. And just her experiences alone were quite interesting, because it's not that I knew nothing of this topic. It was just how much is this an accurate depiction is kind of going through my head. How accurate is it? You know, is this something that has to happen? And it's one where you can kind of put your morals aside and kind of really question about, is this the right way to do things? And I know that Atkins, the author, did some research into it and so was able to obviously put some authenticity into it. But it was still a little bit of that question in my mind of, is this a true depiction of what refugees go through, having not been through it myself? And so that was quite interesting on its own. If the whole book had just been about that, it would have been pretty good anyway. But then you've also got the other two characters that I mentioned before. And I'm probably going to start with Kenny, because I'll come back to Anna and Jono in a sec. You can probably guess where that's going. But Kenny, who is Vietnamese and fled Vietnam after the Vietnamese War, lands in Australia and is kind of trying to find work wherever he can. He hasn't really developed any qualifications, things like that. So he just picks up work based on the various skills he's got. And he tells a lot of the story as kind of this outsider. And a lot of the conflict runs through him, funnily enough, that he represents a lot of the conflict of the novel. So he's not only representing the experiences of refugees, but also the conflict about attitudes towards refugees from within Australia. You see his, for lack of a better word, his own struggle to agree with or disagree with the experiences the refugees are coming, whether he should feel sympathy for them. And it's kind of what I think a lot of people go through. It's he's not willing to stick his neck out because he knows it'll cost him his job, and he doesn't want to have to look for another one. And so he has to kind of keep going along with what's happening. And I think, I mean, in literally when I'm recording this, you've got riots happening in USA and other places around the world. There was protests happening in Australia too, about people who are just standing by and not doing enough. So I think it's a really good book for these times where people are a little bit hesitant to get involved and stand up for things that they should because they're worried about how it'll affect them. And it's kind of a good reminder that at the end of the day, yeah, it might affect you, but it's affecting the people that you aren't standing up for a lot worse. And so I think Kenny was this really interesting character that it took him a long time in the book to really figure out that he had to stand up for himself and stick to his morals, because that was what was causing him all the problems in his life, basically. That once he let go of some of those things that he was trying to do that weren't him, everything just kind of fell into place. So that was really, really good. But again, I haven't really talked about what happens in the novel, although I've kind of mentioned it a bit and you can figure it out. But we also get Kenny's son, Jono, who meets Anna at school. And so they start kind of falling for each other, but she is very reluctant. She doesn't want to jeopardize her situation. She doesn't want to put herself in a place where she's going to get herself in trouble and possibly be sent away, or her family sent away, or ruin any chances they might have of settling in Australia. But Jono doesn't quite understand that, and so he keeps pushing, but then he's also dealing with conflict with his dad as well. And so you've kind of got this triangle where Kenny sees Anna at the detention center, but also obviously is trying to connect with his son, Jono. So Jono's mother had separated from the family a little while before, moved away, and Jono's sister, so Kenny's daughter, had also moved away to go to university. And so it's just the two of them left. And even though Kenny's sister was still around, there was this kind of bit of conflict about who expects what, can they do well, is Jono doing the best he can, is he respectful, should he respect his dad, things like that. And so as you kind of go through Jono and Anna's story, or their connection to each other, it kind of flips between them from time to time. And so we get these kind of struggles that they go through, and as they get to know each other, and some of the cultural differences they have to overcome, and Jono having to explain to Anna certain things, and Anna questioning why they happen a certain way. You've got also conflict that emerges between them as Jono kind of doesn't take it too far, but which sounds really bad, not that at all, not in a sexual way or anything like that. He just still struggles to understand. He eventually makes efforts to go and see her, but doesn't realize I guess danger that he's putting her into. And then things in the refugee camp kind of get a lot worse. There's a protest, Anna's mum gives birth, and so there's another baby on the scene, and so she doesn't go to school for a little while, and Jono wants to know. So it's that conflict between them you get, but you also get the internal conflict of each of the characters, that Anna wants to open up to Jono but doesn't want to risk things for herself. Jono wants to connect with his dad, but also wants to connect with Anna, but doesn't know how to do any of that, or is struggling to all that. And also at the same time, he is suspicious of his dad's role at the detention center. And then you've also got Kenny, who starts to realize that what he's doing may be bad for his son, even though he's earning the money that kind of keeps them like going and everything they need to. And then you've also got Kenny's interactions with Anna, where he tries not to treat her differently because then it's going to cost him and everyone's going to realize what's going on, or that there's something more to what appears. So there's this all these internal conflicts matched with the relationships between these three main characters. On top of all that, you've also got these kind of strong motifs. Music becomes a really strong one, that Anna and Jono connect over their love of different songs. You've got, I mean, Jono's, a lot of his earlier chapters, I guess you'd call them, all components, are written as sort of poems, and they're really good poems too. You could kind of take one or two of them out and isolate them and study them as texts on their own. So Jono is a really, really interesting character, I think, and he's you could almost go a little bit cliche that he's a troubled boy, he doesn't connect with his parents, and he's getting into drugs, right? Like that's a simplification of who he is, though. I think there's a lot more going on, because there's him wanting to know more about his own cultural background, but also him just trying to overcome the kind of loss that he's felt with people leaving him. So obviously his mother and his sister, but then he had another girlfriend who also moved away and was another refugee, and him trying to not have that happen with Anna, or try to get what he can, as in like that closeness to her while she's still around. And I think there's a lot more to him than normally. I think maybe he is still the weakest of the three characters. I think Kenny's a lot more authentic and three-dimensional, so he's really interesting. But Anna as well is terrific too. She's brilliant, and it's not only that is she a really strong female voice, but obviously you're kind of hitting a lot of other issues that she represents, including refugees and multiculturalism. And I think it's interesting too that we see that second generation migrant background, so in the case of Jono, his attitude towards refugees versus his dad's, and how that's something that happens too, that you get people that were refugees and migrants that are not open to the idea of other refugees and migrants. It's really fascinating, I think. So we've got all these different issues that are exploring. So is it a text I've taught? No, I've only read it. Is it one I'd like to teach? Yeah, I definitely would strongly recommend that schools adopt it. I think it's really good. There's a lot you can do with it. Depending on your context too, you could have students that it's maybe a little bit troubling for. If they had some traumatic experiences, which is definitely possible. And that's always something to be mindful of. But that's a matter of if you know your student's background enough, or you could consult with kind of the specialist that might know some of this stuff in your school, definitely worth looking into, because I think it's a good text. And I don't want to give the ending away, but I think it definitely confronts people that haven't been through it into kind of making them question a lot of the stuff, the attitudes. And I think, as I said, like with everything that's going on at the moment, kind of making you accountable for your own stance on different issues. So as a text, what would I do with it? Well, you'd obviously do some great character study. The themes are pretty jumping out at you. That stuff's pretty easy. The narrative structure is good. It doesn't have chapters per se. It's just got these transition from one perspective to the next. And that's also what makes it really hard, because they overlap a little bit and then they extend the story out and then overlap and extend the story out. And that's really fascinating. You get this kind of triangulated perspective on these different issues, which I think is really good too. So I think there's a lot you could do with it. I think, again, you could easily look at empathy and that sort of stuff, perspective, point of view, all those things. I mean, in terms of the concepts, it pretty much hits the vast majority of anything that you get in a novel. You've got obviously strong narration, perspective, point of view, symbol and connotation and those sorts of things. You've got good character. You've got good setting. Genre is a little bit trickier, but I mean, you've also got intertextuality there. There's so much going on that it's one of those novels that would almost teach itself. And in the version I've got, and I'm guessing most would have it too, but they've even got discussion questions and kind of, not a study guide, but suggested activities you could do. And so I think there's so much you could do with it that it's, again, it's one of those texts that if you read it and study it even a little bit, it'll open you up to a lot of those things. And it's not one that you need to push the issues in it. It's not one that you would have to, I mean, I'm trying to think of an example. Let's say something like Ready Player One. You could definitely push the issue of, oh, be wary of technology, which is something that a lot of students are probably over, by the way, because it's in so many texts. Look out for the dangers of technology. But I think this is one where the key concerns jump right out at you, and you don't have to kind of give them your backing. They would just be there on the surface. So something to consider is that as well, that it should have an impact on most students pretty immediately just by reading it. But I'll leave it there for the moment and be back in just a moment with Ad of the Week. Ad of the Week this week, again, it's not a specific ad, it's more of a theme that's happening in advertising at the moment. I'd like to start it off by referring to a meme I saw, which I'm sure some of you will come across over the next couple of weeks for those listening, but it's one that said, ads used to be, buy this Toyota, and now it is a tough and difficult time for everyone. So buy this Toyota because... And that's pretty much it. It was something I'd noticed happening a lot, and it was something I'd thought about addressing here. So let's do it, because the same day that I saw that image, I then saw at least 3 ads that did it, and they were new ads. They weren't ones that I'd seen for the last couple of weeks. And I think we're hitting that point where all these companies that are trying to show their sympathy for everyone with everything that's going on, and I'm mainly referring to COVID at this point, are missing their window where they can do that. So what I mean is, for any company that wants to have as part of their message, look, we're empathetic and understanding, we're a caring company, that window is very rapidly closing, because I think in a couple of weeks, we're going to be, people are just going to go like, yeah, we get it. This has been going on for 6 months now, or close to 6 months. You know, once we hit July and August and there's still things happening, people are going to go, yeah, you know what? You had your chance 3 months ago to make this message when it was at its peak. We're kind of over it now. And I think by the end of June, any company that hasn't done it, they've missed that window to include that in an ad. And seriously, I saw Subway do this. That was the one that kind of was the first of the new ones I saw. Before that, obviously, I'd seen, there was NRMA, Telstra, maybe Optus, Apple, McDonald's, Hungry Jack's maybe. There was a lot. A couple of car companies as well. I think most of the banks had done it. Definitely Commonwealth, and I think Westpac. All these different, you know, companies and businesses and products that they're starting their ads or have somewhere throughout the ad, they use the words of difficult, worrying, troubling, some synonym for that basically. Or we need to care for each other, we need to look out for each other, we need to be safe. Again, all those synonyms, they're not wrong. Absolutely nothing wrong with doing it. It's that you've got to find the line between when are you capitalizing on people's pain and suffering and when are you coming across as genuine. And I think that's what a lot of these companies' problems are going to be. And that's why I'm saying that window is closing, because any new ad that starts to have that message in a couple of weeks is going to be... Yeah, I think any company... Sorry, I was just interrupted for a moment there, so I had to pause. Any company that uses that within the ads, they're just going to come across as disingenuous. That, you know what, if you really cared, you would have sorted something out months ago. You're not going to have taken time and to plan out this ad and film it and record it and then put it out. McDonald's had one out early May, and that was kind of the benchmark for a lot of companies. There were other ones that had beat them out before that, but they just adapted very quickly. And I know they're a huge corporation worldwide. They could do all these things, but they were selling bread and milk, sanitizer now as well. They had things set up very quickly. The supermarkets managed to sort some things out fairly quickly. Good on them. But I mean, these other companies now, if you're still trying to just tap into that emotion of, oh, let's be worried and let's be scared, well, guess what? You've missed the boat. You now need to come up with a different angle and a different approach, something that's a much more positive, future-focused kind of forward-thinking. Because if you're coming at people now saying that life is difficult and tough and scary, well, yeah, it is, but we've pretty much got through the worst of it, at least for the time being. Yeah, there could be a second wave and we could go through all that again. But you're going to, any company that does it will come across as selfish and self-serving. So instead of talking about a specific ad and why it's really effective, what I'm doing here is finding good balance, I think, is some of these companies that have done a good job of showing how they can be perceived as caring and comforting, whether it's, as I said, Coles, Woolworths, Telstra, whoever it is, and then other companies now that keep an eye out because you'll see them, that are not going to come across with that same emotion. They're going to be a little bit more... it's just going to come across as poor timing, ultimately. So just something to keep in mind, again, with advertising is you look at the context where these things come out and what they're responding to and whether or not they're perceived as being authentic or kind of negative about some things. But that's what I want to talk about, is this what we're about to see in advertising, things, the ones that have worked and where companies that can time it right, they do really, really well and they benefit from it. So they get really positive reception, which is what, as I've said, some of those companies did. I think Coles and Woolworths, for the most part, had a pretty positive reception to how they handled everything, and everyone's pretty sympathetic towards their staff. But then you've got companies that are about to come out or are coming out now with ads that they're not going to get that same treatment. So yeah, I think when you think about tone in advertising, timing can make a huge difference. If there's some, and it's, I know people that were putting out content that was about, race relations in the last couple of days or so, and things were coming out, and then these protests, huge protests kind of started. And the timing of it was perfect for some. It was really great because it was exactly supportive of what was happening. Other ones, not necessarily negative, but they basically had to change, like come out very quickly and say, look, we said this, and it's not going to come across as insensitive or anything, but obviously things have changed very rapidly, and so they need to update their information they're giving. And I think that's what we're about to see in advertising too, is that the tone and timing of it all makes a difference. But I'm going to leave it at that. I feel like I've repeated myself a little bit in that section, but I was just trying to get across this balance of the tone, style, and message. But that's it for Ad of the Week. In just a moment, my recommendation. So my recommendation this week, I was debating back and forth about a couple of different ones. Some I'm probably going to do episodes on, so I've held them off from being a recommendation. I'll think about whether or not I make them a recommendation and then still do a full episode on them. But instead, it's going to be a couple of concerts that are available on YouTube. They're really, really fun, definitely worth watching. And I think anyone that has a keen interest in music and just the performance side of it, they're really good to watch. So they're all the Foo Fighters concerts that are all in full on YouTube. If you just look up Foo Fighters Hyde Park, Foo Fighters, Skin and Bones, I think one was Glastonbury, whatever it was. There's a bunch. They've got about four, I think, up there now, and they're all about an hour and a half to 2 hours long. Skin and Bones is more of a proper, like, documentary-ish type presentation, although not a full documentary. And Foo Fighters have done a bunch of those things too. They've done quite a few documentaries. They did one in the making of their 8th studio album. They did another one, or Dave Grohl did one with the Sound City players. So they know what they're doing, but they're just really, really fun. And I think if you've got students that are really interested in music and performing, just watch clips of Dave Grohl performing live and you'll see how much energy he brings. But watch the whole thing and the different ways they do stuff, and they've continually evolved their live performances. They don't do any of the big pyrotechnic crazy stuff that bands like Slipknot or Rammstein do. They also don't have the light shows that you might get from, I know Muse did some good ones, and who else? They also don't have, I mean, a lot of the pop electronic bands will do really cool light show and video displays. They also don't do, I mean, what I've seen them in concert a few times, and what they've said is they really try to emulate that energy that Queen had at Live Aid. And obviously they'll never probably hit that peak because that was just incredible. Again, talk about timing and tone and how it all came together. They probably won't get that, but they really try to replicate that engagement with the crowd. And so all the things they do, they're just fun to watch. They have a lot of good music. They have, I mean, obviously if you're not interested in that kind of rock variety, then hey, you're probably not going to enjoy it. But Skin and Bones is more of an acoustic set, and you get to hear some of the, not the stories behind the songs, but you see different arrangements of them. And then they really try to change some things across their concerts. So I'm not saying sit down and watch 8 hours of Foo Fighters material, because that's a lot, and you hear a lot of the same songs. But what I am saying is, it's, if you are putting on concert at any point, so you might be a music teacher, or you might be someone that works with that kind of stuff, or drama as well. If you have anyone interested in music and performing, 100%, these are great things to watch, because you just can learn a lot about how to interact with crowd and how to set things up to make it more and more interesting and fascinating. So that would be my recommendation for this week, is just go and watch any of those Foo Fighters concerts. If you like more of an acoustic, gentle set, go and watch Skin and Bones. If you like something a bit heavier, then watch probably Hyde Park. Or check out one of the other ones anyway. And if you enjoy it, watch the others at some point. But that's it from me for this segment. And War and Peace will be up in a moment to finish us off. The final segment, as always, is a War and Peace update. And I have finally started reading it again. And it was good because I was probably 2 chapters away from something that would have kept me reading. There was like a kind of a bit of a change, and new complication arose, which was my big criticism of it last time I really talked about it. And so I'm really annoyed with myself that I didn't get to it a little bit sooner, because I probably would have read a little bit more. I would have found the time, or made the time, or just made myself do it. Because, yeah, so we had the, where I kind of left it last was Andre and Natasha were engaged. He was making her wait, or basically they had to wait for a year before they could actually be married. He was away. He was due to return. And that's where I pretty much left it. We had a couple of engagement, divorce kind of situations going on. And now we've got this kind of new antagonist emerging, and this new complication, which is what I was bemoaning a little bit, that, you know, where's it going? What's happening? What's the big problem here? And it's really that daily complications of relationships, and how, and this is what I'm really liking about it, is that it's pretty reflective of things that happen still to this day. And I've seen it happen to people where you've got this relationship between Andre and Natasha, and he's been away for so long, she's starting to doubt whether how much he likes him, what's going to happen. And this other guy has arrived, Anatoly, and he started to flirt with Natasha, and she started to feel, you know, oh look, there's this interest, and he's a handsome man, maybe that's who I want to be with instead. And then she starts to question herself. And then we get this other chapter where Anatoly has basically said, well, I'm just here to flirt, I'm not really going to take it seriously. And it's just this really interesting dynamic now that's going to occur over these next few chapters, that was what I read. So I'm really disappointed in myself that I hadn't read up to that point, because it made me want to keep reading onwards after I started it. So it's good. There is a new complication happening. We've kind of moved away again from that physical war, destructive war, to a relationship and other conflict. And I guess the war is there. And again, there's this balance between war and peace, and when everything's in harmony and when it's not. So yeah, I'm very happy to keep reading again now. So any of that criticism I gave it over the last couple of times I talked about it, that's kind of gone away, as we've got this new struggle and beginning. But I'm going to leave it at that, because I don't like to go on too long about War and Peace when I'm not reading it as much as I should, and when I'm updating it every week. So that'll do it for me for this episode. Thanks again for listening. Don't forget to check out any of those things I've said. Also, read between us if you can. I'd really like to hear someone else that's read it, to see what they think about whether they would teach it or not. But that's it from me. You can find me at edudaveshin on Twitter if you really want to. Otherwise, share this, write a review, and just tell other people about it if you're enjoying it. And if you're not, well, tell other people about it in case they might. But that's it for me. Thank you, everyone.